Welcome to the Fuller Money Audio Commentary. This is David Fuller on Friday, the 14th of September, recording at 9:33 p.m. And that's British summer time still. Now, this being Friday, this is the big picture long-term outlook for the various asset classes. But first, let's have a quick review of the week. Stock markets, they've been very strong with a follow-on from the ECB measures not long ago and bolstered again very strongly in anticipation of and in response to the Fed's announcement which came out yesterday. Now, we've had to the fore, certainly Wall Street and a number of European indices have pushed right on up to and some through their earlier highs for the year. The ASEAN stock markets, which have been going through a long reversion to the mean process, largely by moving horizontally, I should add, indicating their underlying strength, firming up here, pushing through to new highs once again. So it's been a very strong picture for equities, and today was no exception. We had some huge gains in Asia, including Hong Kong being up 2.9%. Also big gains in Europe, a number of them on the scale of 2.25% or more. And those include, the Euro Stoxx Index up over 2, the CAC 2.25, IBEX 2.75, the Italian market up 2.3%, Sweden up 2.64%. Now, Wall Street, which had such good gains yesterday, was a little bit more subdued. All the America's markets had good gains yesterday. Best of the gains there today came from Canada, and the Toronto Index up 1.13%. Wall Street closed with reasonable gains. It was firm throughout the day. Saw those gains pared back somewhat, and then they picked up again towards the close. And we've got the S&P 500 at 1465, nearly 66. Okay, elsewhere, big data on the week. Long dated government bond prices, they've been hammered this week, and the U.S. long bond was particularly weak in here today, down, still trading in after hours, down 2 10/32 points. More on that. Well, more on all of these things shortly. The U.S. dollar has been quite weak in here, and we've seen it fall pretty well across the boards. There's one exception here today, in that the yen weakened on rumors that intervention might be imminent. So the dollar was back up to 78.39 against the yen, but it fell everywhere else. Not all that much against the Australian, but we're back to 105.49. Remember, we were down at sort of around 102.3 not very long ago. Among top gainers, hold your breath here, the euro up to 131.27, sterling up to 162.25, and if you look at some of the Asian currencies, such as the Singapore dollar, I mean, the U.S. is not far off its all-time lows there. So, soft dollar in here this week. Now, precious metals have been rampant against that background, and that continued here today. We've seen platinum up about $30. Here today, tin and palladium, silver. Silver actually closed down a little bit, but it hit a huge day to the upside yesterday, and it's still up at $34.70. And gold, which is less volatile than the others usually, but we're at 1770 and change as I speak. The industrial metals were strong, particularly tin, and there's a small backwardation in the tin market. And we have pretty well all the soft commodities were up today, except for soybeans, which have been so strong in previous weeks. And I think natural gas is also down a little bit, just slipped back underneath that $3 level. Well, what's going on here overall? Well, monetary policy rules. That's not the first time I've said that. It's a familiar refrain for veteran subscribers. It's, in Formani's eyes, by far the most important indicator that we can monitor, and we never want to be on the wrong side of the Fed. So we've had more quantitative easing, and while that's very controversial, and you'll see some interesting videos and articles on this subject in here today, videos by Mark Faber, who makes some very interesting comments. I wish they'd just shown the whole thing rather than editing it, however. But let's stick here to the markets. Wall Street's been the big influential leader of this rally, and again, the Wall Street leash effect is extremely powerful, as you know. So where are we actually going on this move? Well, here we have the S&P, as I mentioned in my review of highlights here, up at 1465. It's almost 1466. Now, cast your mind back, and you may recall that back in early June, when we got those first upper dynamics, we said give the upside the benefit of the doubt, provided the low a few days earlier at I believe it was at 1260 is not taken out. Well, here we are, 205 points higher, and a bullish risk-on mood certainly being expressed in the markets. And where do we go from here? Well, if you look at the chart of the S&P, and I've posted it again here today, it is steepening. The reactions, first it started off as a ranging recovery, but while we've still seen some ranging, there have been, including a pause for about 3 weeks, right at the old highs for the year, those March and May highs. It surged again here. And so the curve is steepening. We're getting a bit of acceleration, or we've seen a bit of acceleration here this week. And the downside moves have been absolutely minimal, indicating very clearly a demand-dominated environment overall. But remember that number, 1465. We're coming up to some big karma, and that is 1500, the 1500 level. For the big psychological level for the S&P, and all the more important because the tops, those mountain peaks, I'll refer to the first one as certainly, back in 2000 was a little bit above that 1500 level. I think it got up to about 1550 or thereabouts before going into that big bear market decline. And then in 2007, the S&P pushed up even a little higher. I think it was up around the 1460, beg your pardon, 1560 something level, maybe slightly higher. And that, of course, was a huge top and fell all the way down to 666 in the crash that then occurred. So really, it probably takes more than QE to have a successful challenge of those highs. So while we have been bullish and remain bullish in here in the short term, we really should consider the probability that we've now entered the end game of this particular run before it spills over into another corrective phase. Now, the devil's in the detail, as they say. So what do I mean by a corrective phase? Well, a reaction of 5 to 10%, perhaps, maybe slightly more. I think that's not at all impossible that we will see that, but probably from a somewhat some slightly higher level than we have in here today. And we may just get a lot of ranging here overall. For one reason, the QE is still there. Interest rates are still extremely low, so this remains a tailwind. And although corporate profits have been revised downwards in for the last 2 quarters at least, they're still reasonably good. And more importantly, the valuations are lower than they were back in 2007, and one heck of a lot lower than they were back in 2000. That's due to the additional growth and earnings and dividend increases that we've seen in these S&P and other stocks. So I don't feel that there's anything like the prospect of a drop back down to those lows that we've seen, which are below the 800 level. I don't think we get anywhere close to that, although people have been forecasting that. There are analysts who've been forecasting that every day for the last 3 years or more, and will perhaps go on and continue to do so. But low interest rates, still a favorable environment. Markets will suffer jitters, but probably not enough to cause a major rout. And what and then move on from Wall Street. The European situation, which had been the focal point of global concerns, well, for a very long time here, over 2 years. And that, let's put it this way, rumors of the euro's imminent demise have been exaggerated. Mario Draghi at the ECB has successfully triggered a massive short covering exercise. I think a number of hedge funds that have done well previously have probably taken a beating in all of that. We'll see it in the next quarterly returns. But Europe's led the way, as I've mentioned in all these audios, throughout this recovery, and that's impressive. And it's still in form, albeit getting somewhat overextended as well. But it's a big deal psychologically to have this situation, which has absolutely terrified every investor going, and to see that, well, lo and behold, Euro is getting its act together somewhat. The central bank is providing loads of liquidity, and they're working on a banking union, which is crucial. Can't possibly have a successful euro, in my view, and I've said this many times before, without the banking union. The political union, which I've also mentioned, well, we get a little closer to that, but I don't think we'll truly see political union. People don't want it. And the euro can survive without it, but it can't survive without banking union, in my opinion, and that's what we're getting. We're certainly heading in that direction. All the problems of high unemployment, too much debt, insufficient growth, they all remain, but at least they are being well, at least people are thinking about solutions. And if Euro just is able to muddle through, then that's not so bad for other markets, is it? Now, China is hugely interesting because that's been another focal point of concern, although less so for us here at Fuller Money, but certainly the stock market was a serial underperformer until we got that that sharp bounce. That was kind of a one-day wonder, so that hasn't led to sustained strength, but I think it will. It looks to me like we're getting a consolidation now, but there's uncertainty over the absence of Mr. Z, who's one of the heads of the new government, as the changeover takes place next month. There've been rumors that maybe wouldn't get the changeover next month. That would be surprising. I kind of doubt that, but let's put it this way: there are enough uncertainties to make many people cautious. And the Fuller Money view is that China is cheap. Certainly, that's true on the PE and multiple and yield valuations. It's way overextended technically. That was a massive upward dynamic that we saw last week. And I think that this is the beginning of recovery, which could be quite significant. And when China does recover, and you have to think back a way for that, go back to 2009 and go back to 2005 before that. When China does recover, it's usually one of the better relative performers. So, to me, that's quite an attractive situation, and it may buck the trend created by a spillover from this strength that we're seeing on Wall Street. In other words, when Wall Street loses its upside momentum, and I think that's a probability at some point here in the not too distant future, we may well see China become one of the outperformers to the upside. It is capable of uncoupling for a while on the upside, just as it uncoupled by being the only one that was moving down when others were gaining. And what sectors do we like the most? Well, we've been huge fans of the autonomies for quite some time, the most successful of the multinational companies, but they've had such a heck of a run, and some of them have become a bit more erratic, lost some of their uptrend consistency overall. We've been a huge fan of the dividend aristocrats, and some of those have had quite good moves, but still should have enough underpinnings, not least because of those dividends, but also evident on the charts, to cushion downward risk. Now, we've been a huge fan of technology. Again, the Nasdaq's getting somewhat overextended in here right now, but we certainly remain long-term, big long-term bulls of tech. But I think what we like, I know what we like the most in here right now, would be these mining shares, global mining shares, because they are absolutely hammered, huge short positions. I don't think those are fully covered, and some very good valuations. You get a leader such as BHP Billiton, which yields 4% and has a good chart pattern. The metal prices are recovering, and that's going to surprise a lot of people. Run through the charts and have a look at the metal prices. Some of them are very, very enticing, and they're being led by copper, and the copper shares are leading the recovery among the industrial metal shares. But the precious metal shares, or at least anything that's got a Hofgood story, has had a very good week in here this week, and they ought to have. They're more speculative. They're far more speculative than bullion, but they should start to rec or they should have some further recovery scope. Okay, moving on quickly because there's so much that's interesting in here, but I don't want to torture you with the length of this audio any more than I usually do. Long-dated government bond prices, so they really sagged this week. My view, and this isn't the first time you've heard it, is that if you've been listening to all these audios, is that I assume that we've seen the tops for long-dated government bond prices. I assume that we've seen the tops, unless we get clear evidence to the contrary. But we've now seen quite a reaction for some of them, led by the Bunds, the German Bunds, and we're seeing. And so the flip side of that is, of course, that we've got yields that look like they're basing. Now, with all the QE going on, as I've also mentioned, there is a possibility that they get a lengthy extension to these base formations, but I wouldn't assume that's for certain. In other words, these yields could move up more quickly than anybody expects. I think there has been one heck of a lot of complacency among bond bulls in recent months. That's typical of what you get in bubbles. People believe that it'll go on inflating, or they don't think it's a bubble at all. Well, we do. We feel that this is the last serioso large bubble in the world here today. And that's why I'm running with a short position in JGBs. It's risky always shorting these government bonds with QE going on. I know that to my cost from earlier in the year with U.S. Treasuries. And then, of course, that yield, even though it's much reduced, is working against you. When you have a short position in long-dated government bonds. But let's put it this way, from an investor perspective, I certainly wouldn't own them. If you have any long-dated government bonds, and I don't, but they would be the bonds of governments with sound balance sheets, and that does not include the main OECD countries. So that is, this posing an interesting dilemma here. If we get these bond yields moving down quite sharply, and when the turn occurs for real, it really does surprise people with its persistence. In other words, you get endless false dawns with the bonds. If you want to, from another market category, an example of what I mean by that, just look at precious metals, what they've done recently. But I'll come back to them in a moment. Stick with the bonds here. First, say the weakness is being led by the German Bunds, but we've got real commonality here across the boards. They all look weak. They've also all fallen back to areas of potential support. Now, potential doesn't mean that they're necessarily going to get support. But what do I mean by the potential support? They're testing those 10 and 30-year contracts are testing rising 200-day moving averages. They've also fallen back to the top side of prior trading ranges. So anybody who's ever studied charts knows that those are potential support levels. Now, the Bunds have broken beneath that 200-day moving average, not massively, but they have broken beneath it, and they have also broken beneath the upper side of those prior trading ranges. So I'd be careful in that market, certainly if you're inclined to be looking and inclined to be a buyer or still hold any of those positions. They look vulnerable to us. Okay, moving on. What about this US dollar? Well, it's certainly signaling that globally we're in a risk-off mode here overall. The Fed's been creating lots of new money, as you know. The Fed does not want to have a stronger dollar, and so I think it's actively trying to reverse the gains that had occurred earlier in the year when it was regarded as a safe haven currency, and the Fed's been successful in reversing those gains. And this weak dollar is taken, although it's range bound overall still, there's a risk that it does take on a bit of momentum in here overall. In other words, put it another way, the dollar technically, on a very short-term technical basis, the dollar is getting a little bit oversold in here against some of these currencies. And the yen is overbought, by the way. But what... I'm saying, although it's getting a little bit oversold, until I see upper dynamics by the dollar, I'll give the current trend the benefit of the doubt for a little longer. Now, this has been manna from heaven for precious metal bulls, which have seen those explosive moves up out of the trading ranges. That provides, in my opinion, confirming evidence. When is it sufficiently confirmed? There'll be doubters about gold as long as it's below this $1,800 level, perhaps, or some of them will even doubt it while it's below the high that we saw back in September of last year. But everything that it's done, in my opinion, technically, is consistent with our hypothesis. Often uttered daily during that tedious ranging phase that we saw from, you know, in June, July, August. We've had this massive, decisive upward break, very little pullback. Now, it won't always move like that, quite obviously. And we're up near some potential psychological resistance areas. Those would be around the $1,800 level for gold, and it's 70 in here, 1770 here today. We have platinum up at 1700, a little bit of psychological resistance there. And we've got palladium up at 700, which might provide a little psychological resistance. And for silver, there's the $35 level. So I feel that all we've seen, or the worst we're going to see, in my opinion, is the end of the beginning. The end of the beginning of this very powerful rise in precious metals, which has a perfect storm of events going forward. Let's see if I can rattle some of them off. Certainly there's the QE, that's a big factor. There has been the short covering, that's pretty well completed, I should imagine, but people jumping back on the bandwagon of a momentum move certainly has been taking place. We have the situation in South Africa, which is really quite alarming. Now, that's mainly been in platinum, but it has spread within the platinum sector, and there's a real possibility that it can also interfere with production in gold. Platinum's much more sensitive to that, given that over 70% of our newly mined platinum comes from South Africa. But what it's done is create a potential supply shortage. Now, whether that actually occurs or not, there certainly has been some industrial buying of these metals as a hedge against any shortages of supplies. So, as I mentioned, there are a lot of factors in there which are in that are helping to drive this precious metals market. So, all again, my worst case scenario is that we're at the end or near the end of the initial leg to the upside. We may see more ranging activity, a somewhat longer consolidation lasting a few weeks or so, but we'll have another go here and possibly even new highs before the end of the year, led by gold. Now, I've been looking again, when you get a market like this that starts to perform, it surprises even the bulls. And so that's gold has moved up even faster than I would have dared hope in here over the last month or so. But all that's going to do is convince people and give them all the more reason to want to be in the market. And I think there's a very considerable amount of money that has either missed this move or feels that people who feel that they are not sufficiently long of these markets. And therefore, I think they'll be well underpinned for the rest of the year and well into 2013, as I've said before. And when you look at the chart patterns overall, they're capable of supporting significant upside moves. So this is a secular bull market that is alive and well, and just every time we get a decent rally in gold, more people recognize that this is these are and gold and the other precious metals, that these are monetary metals that remain in form. And to the extent that with China stimulating its economy, and I notice that some analysts are starting to recommend automobile shares. Well, they use a lot of platinum and palladium for their catalytic converters. And therefore, that rather depressed market, automobiles, looks, well, if they're right on that talk of an improvement, and I think they probably are, then we will see further gains. Now, what about these? What about these other commodities? I mentioned the industrial metals, which look too low, and they've begun a recovery. The evidence is not as conclusive as it is for precious metals, but it's pretty good. And I would give the upside the benefit of the doubt. And this move, as I mentioned before, is led by China, and led by copper. And we've got tin packing in as well. But they're all turning, so we're getting this clear evidence of commonality. Now, in other industrial commodities, crude oil has also been firm. We've got the WTI at 99. It had been a little above 100 here today before backing off. We've got the Brent at 116.70. It had been up to nearly 118 earlier today before backing off. But these are uncomfortably strong prices here. It's not a crisis, but if you look at that CCI index, which bottomed just above that 500 level, not surprisingly, this has roared back. This is a big rally. It is continuing. The bottom of that lengthy correction in the CCI, that's a continuous commodity index, is in for sure. And commodities, a great opportunity here right now, but again, as I've said before, in these upward cycles, it'll also become one of the next big problems, particularly if crude moves higher. Now, there's no shortage of crude around. Despite the sanctions against Iran, there's plenty of crude around, but people are stockpiling and speculating in it because of these demonstrations and embassy attacks, U.S. embassy attacks that we've seen in the Middle East. And that may well, and then there's also the talk of an Israeli strike against Iran's nuclear installations. Now, I've been of the view that that was certainly not going to be happening before the presidential election. Others have disagreed and continue to disagree on that, and we're all in the don't know category. I certainly hope it doesn't happen, because I think it would be a Pyrrhic victory at best. But these are all factors that keep oil prices elevated in here, whereas on a purely demand-based-driven basis, they would be $10 to $20 lower. I'm convinced of that. And what we don't want to see is having is we do not want to see them move $10 to $20 higher here on these uncertainties over the Middle East. Incidentally, all those embassy attacks, so on, I think that is another part of that perfect storm in terms of demand for gold bullion as well. Industrial, I beg your pardon, agricultural commodities, we've got that grain and bean complex, which had been so strong due to the drought in the U.S. and elsewhere, but at least prices have leveled off for the time being. And actually, corn looks a little toppy, although I am not tempted to short it in here at this stage. Just a quiet time. We're in between crops now. The U.S. crop is virtually known, and it's not good. What else to mention? Rough rice is not. It's been firm here, but it's well below the corn and the soybeans and the wheat. It's currently trading at $15.27. If rough rice were to spike up in sympathy or due to some fundamental catalyst, that would be a serious factor overall. So, wow, there's a lot going on here, isn't there? And it's very exciting, and it's been extremely rewarding if you've got some stock market positions, and if you have been participating in this precious metals recovery, which has a long way to go over the medium term, in my opinion. And I think those mining shares will surprise all those bears, and there certainly were plenty of them overall. And on that note, have a fabulous weekend. All the best.